Namaste, ladies and gentlemen. This is a very special instance as we're about to hear of how to pursue a successful career in regulatory affairs. Now, before we get underway, I have a few thoughts to share with you. Very often, as we progress in our careers over time, in terms of those who positively influence us, in my opinion, we come across three buckets of people. The ones we respect, then there are those who we absolutely love working with. And then there is that third, rarest group of those who we wish to emulate in terms of knowledge, ability, skill set, and achievements. One such person in my life is Nancy Morrison. To me, she embodies the virtues of every one of those buckets I've alluded to. Truth be told, this is a rather bittersweet moment for my colleagues and me alike, since Nancy has decided to retire, which actually makes it a time as good as any to hear from her. I'm very happy for her, since she can now finally do the things that she has always wanted to, away from the stressors of work. And I'm also selfishly sad, because her expertise may not always be a click away in the days to follow. That said, I know Nancy is always super approachable, and I potentially will reach out to her on multiple occasions. But at this moment in time, I want to thank Nancy for all her contributions over time and for her willingness to share with us what it takes to build a truly successful career in regulatory affairs. It's an area that she has consistently excelled in, day in and day out, across her entire career. There is no exaggeration here. I consider myself very small, very insignificant in comparison with her stature, her skill set, commitment, her drive to be the best, her consistent drive, that is, her professionalism, and unmatched achievements. And I consider myself tremendously lucky to have worked with her and to just have been on the same team as her. So let's hear it from Nancy. Please take it away, Nancy. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jay. You're going to make me cry before I start. It has absolutely been a pleasure to work with you, and I feel the same way, that you are one of those rare people that anyone that gets the chance should take that opportunity to work with you. So thank you.
Thank you, Nancy.
And with that, I'll jump into some slides. So just put together a short little presentation, trying to put my thoughts down about my career in regulatory affairs. This is my bio slide, and what you'll see is it says approximately 30 years, maybe a few more than that, involved in regulated industry, and really had the opportunity to do a lot of different things. I'm very grateful for that opportunity. So just share with you a little bit about my career progression. It comes down to three different buckets I would put my career in. And the first was, I spent the first 10 years of my career in quality assurance. And I did that in a variety of roles. I started out doing auditing on the manufacturing floor, learned a lot about how manufacturing works, injection molding, mixing, filling, all those things that happen in manufacturing, got a good firsthand look at that. Became a supervisor, a group leader, a manager. And basically, anytime there was a new area that needed to be developed, someone said, can you take over the micro lab? And I'm like, oh, sure, I can do the micro lab. I had no clue what I was doing, but I do know how to read and I do know how to research. And so I took that over. Same with analytical lab. We brought in GCs and HPLCs. So I learned what that meant, and I learned how to read the reports, and that was really good. It's a very different experience doing it in your work career than it is in a college laboratory. It definitely gives you a different perspective. And after I had made my rounds in quality assurance, I had about 75 people working for me, many different groups of people. And I decided I took a little project on, could you help the regulatory group with some labeling project? We needed to change about 3,000 labels. So, and they needed help. So I'm like, oh, sure, I'll be happy to do that. no idea that that would lead to a change to regulatory affairs. And I kind of took a step down and a step back and went in as a specialist in the RA group at the company I was working at, went through a series of promotions. And what I found is that I absolutely love regulatory affairs. And people always look at me like, you love it? And I'm like, yes, I really love it. We get to do good stuff. We get to bring amazing products to the market. We get to help those. It's all the problem solving. And what I kind of say when people say quality assurance or regulatory affairs, what was the difference? What made that change? In quality assurance, a lot of the times you have to say no. That product did not pass, did not meet, can't go. You have to do some rework. You have to do, same like you were always delivering bad news. In regulatory affairs, I feel like it's the opposite. You always get to give good news. Yes, I can help you bring that product to market. Here's what we need to do. And so I just loved being a part of that new and innovation stuff, stuff that had never been on the market before, new ways to approach things. And I felt like it brought all my skills and problem solving skills to what I get to do every day for fun. So that was great. And then the third phase of my career has been consulting. And I truly have been blessed to work with amazing colleagues and amazing clients. So super smart. See a problem, working to solve it. They just need some help. And I'm really grateful for all the clients that have allowed me to come in and help them bring their product to market. Couple general things, never say no. Like somebody wants you to do something, you just do it. Like you will learn something. Even if what you learn is, I never want to do that again, that's okay. At least you know, right? That's not what your strength is. So try everything. I've tried a little bit of everything in my career, and I'm really grateful. It's amazing how you can extract from those experiences. But I will say, don't burn yourself out, right? So if you've got 25 things on your list and you're going to take number 26, make sure you take a couple off the bottom so that things are okay. The other thing from a career perspective, it's okay to take a lateral move. That worked out great for me when I moved into regulatory affairs. When I think about regulatory and what it means, it's really important what regulatory bodies do, that they really are protecting public health. And we're all patients first, right? If I go to the hospital, I want to know that those devices, that they work for me. And so this is my why. This is my son, Matthew. He's 30 years old, and I'm using his picture with permission. This was the day he graduated from college. And every single day, he uses a power wheelchair, he uses a manual shower chair, he uses urinary catheters, syringes, he uses a transfer board, and then he uses some other things that are not medical devices, they're sports equipment, but basketball wheelchair and a power soccer wheelchair. And so when I think about what are we doing and how are we bringing devices to market, I think about Matthew. Just to give you an idea, some of the things he went through, he has ventricular peritoneal shunts. The first one was implanted when he was 3 days old. The second one was implanted when he was 6 weeks old. And he's had 7 revisions to those. So when one of our clients came to us and said, we have one that we think we're going to increase the mean time to failure, I was like, yes, I want to work on that. I don't want him to go through extra surgeries that aren't necessary. Similarly, he had a severe kyphosis of his spine. So it curved outward. And when he was 12 years old, he had surgery to put rods and to fuse the bones all the way from his hips all the way up to the high part of his spine. And so my first career in medical devices was at a spinal implant company. So that really meant a lot to me to see how that was done and to submit those 510Ks. And looking back on it, you know, I remember thinking, is that all the testing you do? Right? Because I was coming at it from a parent perspective, not a regulatory person. And then that last picture there, just to give you an idea, when he was 19 and he had to go in for an x-ray, we found that both the rods in his back were broken. So we've certainly been through the route of device failures. And so when you think about all that testing and why the notified body or why the FDA is asking for one more strength test. That's why, because it's really important. The other device I have there is a cell saver. And this is a piece of regulatory that sometimes we forget about, and that's reimbursement. And so when he was going in to have his back surgery, they knew there would be a lot of blood loss, and the insurance denied the blood saver, which was going to result in more transfusions for him and a higher risk for the surgery than if that device had been okay. We eventually got it through appeal to be covered, but just something to think about when you're thinking about devices, you also need to think about reimbursement. Just to give you an idea of his journey, right? He had his back closure on the day he was born. He had two VP shunts, as I said. He had a club foot when he was born that was corrected with screws. He had a lazy eye, so he had surgery to correct that. And when I took him back 24 hours later to the eye doctor, his eye was all swollen, and I thought that was part of normal eye surgery. But I looked around the waiting room at the eye doctor and realized that all the other patients that had surgery did not have this big swollen eye. He had an allergic reaction to the sutures. So I think about biocompatibility and how important that is for that. He's had all the revisions. He's had his back surgery, lots of sutures, staples, glue, instruments, all part of his life. He still has the two VP shunts that are implanted, spinal rods, connector screws. The screw for his club foot was temporary, so that was removed. So just, I think of it in terms of what would I want for Matthew? I want this device to work. And I find that's helpful when you're submitting something to a regulatory body. And I just put the FDA's mission statement there on the right and highlighted, right? Everything about their mission statement is about protecting the public health, protect the public health, to respond to deliberate and naturally emerging public health threats. It's all about that. And so when I'm doing a submission, if you keep in mind that that's what FDA is looking for, they're trying to protect the public health, and you do your submission in that way, it really helps get through the process. You don't get as many questions. You don't get, you don't have any misses, as many misses, because you've thought about what does it mean to the patient. And you, when you explain it in that way, it tells a really nice story and helps you get through the regulatory process. So I'm going to share with you a few things that I think make for a really strong regulatory person. And remember that a lot of it is relationships. You're building a relationship with your notified body. You're building a relationship with your FDA reviewer, with your teammates, with the marketing group, with R&D. And you really want to be a valuable team member. And I think that starts with, right? So many times somebody comes and they've got an idea and they're really excited about it. And you hear people say, well, no, you can't do that. And it's like, it such shuts down the energy in the room. And so from a regulatory perspective, and one of my first regulatory mentors taught me that the answer is always yes. And there is a way to get to yes. And so that's the job of regulatory. And that's what's more fun, is to figure out how that answer is yes. Now, maybe the answer is yes if you do clinical trials, and the person may not want to hear that, or they may not, you know, believe it, or they may want to argue with you. So the answer, but if you start with yes, at least then you're changing the dynamic and you're turning around the conversation and making it a positive, not a negative. And then you have to build some credibility, because they want to know that you know what you're talking about. And one of the ways I do that is I cite the reasons, or I cite references. So in the case of, yes, we can do that, but you're going to need clinical data, I might say there have been 14 510Ks cleared, and 12 of them had clinical data. The other two that were cleared without clinical data were modifications to an existing device. So which category do we fall in? And what that does is it puts the burden back on R&D to say, oh, no, this is not a modification. So, yes, we're going to need clinical data. But that builds your credibility as you go. If you can cite the reference, the regulation, the guidance, the predicate device, It's just going to help you. And then pretty soon people start to trust you. And you do this for a while and it becomes part of the habit. And it's actually, I find it's better for me because it helps me with my thought process along the way. The next tip I would give you is to always go to the source. So I do a search engine just like everybody else. I find blogs, I find articles, and that helps me find keywords, but I never rely on those. So if you think about, if I work at an implant company and I'm making an assessment of a device, I'm doing it through the lens of, oh, I'm working on an implant. That may not apply to a class one physical device. It might not apply to a bed. So I never really trust, and not that people don't write good blogs, like I think we write really good blogs and white papers, but those also point you to the regulation where the source is of what is the requirement that the FDA or that the notified body is following. And that's going to give you a better source to look at when you're making those final decisions. And along with that is to understand the why behind the regulation. Most regulations are created because there was a failure. So there was something that didn't go well. So somebody puts in a new rule to help prevent that from happening again. So for example, with FDA regulations, I always go back and look at the preamble. What were the comments? What was FDA's rationale for doing that? And I think, you know, that's very helpful to understand the why. And so look for that, any rationale, any preamble that you can read, it's going to help you get there. The other thing that I find a really strong regulatory person is they're not limited to, oh, this is the way we've always done it. They look for new ideas. They look for new ways to succeed. New regulations also mean new opportunities. There's something new that's happened. I think FDA gave us a great one last year in the omnibus bill when they authorized predetermined change control plans, right? I can plan for my next change and I'm not going to have to do a new submission. Take advantage of those. There's nothing wrong with being the first to go through the agency with something like that. Because FDA is going to be figuring out, you can figure it out. You can help pave that way and make life easier for people going on in the next time. The other piece of advice is to read it and then read it again. You'll read each time you read it, you're going to look at it through a slightly different lens and you're going to pick up some little nuance. So it's okay. Just know that you're going to spend, if you're in regulatory, you're going to spend some time reading things, and that's okay. And you might not understand it the first time, or the language may be not common sense to you. But by the time you read it and you read it again and you've read the preamble, it's all going to start to click in place. And then you'll be able to understand it and you'll be able to explain it to others. And obviously, the try something new or different. I'm going to repeat that sentence there, right? It's okay. Try something new, right? Somebody had to be the first one to get an EU MDR certificate. Someone had to be the first person to get an IVDR certificate. There's going to be a new regulation that comes out after I'm retired and hanging out on the beach. So I'm counting on you to pick that up and try it. And then make sure you listen very, very carefully. I always like it, because sometimes when FDA meetings, right, you kind of sense there might be an underlying comment that they're not making explicitly. But if you listen really carefully, they're going to give you clues as to where to go, what guidance to look at, what might be a better predicate than what you had planned to do. So listen, and listen to your R&D groups, right? They're going to tell you this is a really unique, cool feature. That's what you need to focus on. And you need to explain that really carefully when you do your submission. So it all starts with being a good listener. So those are my regulatory tips. And then this is what I'm going to be doing this summer. That's Matthew in the red circle there with his power wheelchair soccer team, using sports equipment, not devices. And so with that, I wish you luck and a very successful regulatory career. Thank you very much.